blessings of love and respect we offer to all, in times past and present, who have opened the doors of wisdom, reuniting all beings with their intrinsic purity. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. The recitation of this rosary ever expands the awakening of faith in the three jewels, Bodhi, Dharma, and Sangha. Bodhi Saranam Gacchami, Dutiyampi Tatiyampi Saha. I turn to the perfect nature of truth for guidance. Again and yet again, may it be so. Dharmam Saranam Gacchami, Dutiyampi Tatiyampi Saha. I turn to the teachings for guidance. Again and yet again, may it be so. Saranam Saranam Gacchami, Dutiyampi Tatiyampi Saha. I turn to the holy order for guidance. Again and yet again, may it be so. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Dukkha, the noble truth of suffering. Dukkha Samudaya, the noble truth of the origin of suffering. Dukkha Nirodha, the noble truth of the extinction of suffering. Dukkha Nirodha Gamini Patipada, the noble truth of the path that leads to the extinction of suffering. So long as these four noble truths are not understood, we shall wander in sorrow and ignorance. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. All formations are transient, anicca. All formations are subject to suffering, dukkha. All things are without a self, anatta. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Namo Prajna Paramita Pridaya, homage to the wisdom in the heart. Form is not different from emptiness. Emptiness is not different from form. This is the teaching of our spiritual ancestors, Gautama Buddha, and all the great teachers who have transmitted the Dharma to this holy day. Blessed is the knowledge of emptiness. Homage to the devotees of this and all paths of self-purification. May all find simplicity, the joyous and practical guide. The Dharma, being the contents of enlightenment, in which there is no bondage and no suffering, offers freedom from the cankers of ignorance and fear. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Sangha is the holy order of spiritual ancestors, monks, priests, and all those who follow and practice this path. Homage to the Sangha. Homage to all who are approaching this holy path. Homage to all who follow and establish this holy path. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. By compassionate comprehension that dissipates delusion, by compassionate aspiration that harms no one, by compassionate speech that makes for clarity, by compassionate self-discipline that brings no regret, by compassionate livelihood that brings no discredit, by compassionate endeavor that results in goodness, by compassionate mindfulness that proves this path, by compassionate awareness that leads to nirvana. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself.
With this recitation,
I do confirm my acceptance of these three pure precepts.
The precept of restraint and religious observances.
The precept of obedience to all good laws.
The precept to benefit all sentient beings.
In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself.
With this recitation,
I do confirm my acceptance of these 10 grave prohibited precepts.
Not to lead a harmful life,
nor to encourage others to do so.
Not to take that which is not given.
Not to commit or participate in unchaste conduct.
Not to tell lies nor practice believing the fantasies of authority.
Not to use intoxicating drinks or narcotics,
nor assist others to do so.
Not to publish other people's faults.
Not to extol oneself and slander others.
Not to be avaricious in bestowal of the teachings.
Not to be angry.
Not to speak ill of this religion or any other.
In this way,
I do most deeply vow to train myself.
In the practice of loving kindness,
in the practice of pure attention,
in the practice of ever-expanding faith,
in the practice of constant devotion,
in the practice of inquiry through correct dhyana.
In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself.
Oh, happy blessed day.
Oh, happy blessed place.
Oh, happy blessed time.
Oh, happy blessed path.
Oh, happy blessed opportunity.
In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself.
Here, in humble submission,
in order to experience this most perfect now,
I deeply vow
and sacrifice all thoughts,
all tensions,
all pressures,
and desires.
I am born of karma.
I am heir to karma.
I abide in karma,
and I am supported by karma.
Whatever I do creates karma,
and I shall surely experience this karma.
The merit for all good acts I do freely offer to all beings.
Dutyampi tatyampi svaha.
Again and yet again may it be so.
Willingness is the name of the key to the gate of awakening.
For even to awaken from deep sleep and face the new day,
there must be the willingness to do it.
Here in my hand is the opportunity,
and the way is clear beyond the gate of thought and desire.
There is no self and other,
as the awareness of pure, undisturbed consciousness slips into all consciousness.
Up with the back of the crown of the head, shoulders relaxed, belly is relaxed, eyes open, cast down, attention to the breath. Counting silently to yourself at the bottom of each exhalation. 1 to 10. And then beginning again at 1. any time that you realize the attention has wandered, just noticing where it went, dropping that, and coming back to the breath, beginning to count again at one. Thank you. to do, know where to get. Just sitting and breathing and counting and noticing.
here can end suffering. If any suffering is more important than anything, we will end suffering. If any suffering is not more important than anything, we will not end suffering. If I am suffering, it is because I am choosing something over ending suffering. We are not here to create and cling to beliefs. We are here to pay attention. We are here to use everything in our experience to see how we cause ourselves to suffer, so we can drop that and end suffering.
So people can sit right back down. A reminder that there are back jacks in the corner there for anyone who's new to practice and would like to grab one of those. Rebecca, Scott, Sequoia, I think we're going to need some more tacos. Maybe you could go grab some more of those. Do a little sound check while we're waiting. How can you guys hear me back there, even with that fan on?
Yes.
Yeah. So this morning is an open group discussion, a chance to look at whatever you're looking at in your practice. And as we are fond of pointing out, since all of life is within practice, that really leaves the field wide open. So what shall we look at this morning? Kevin, you're probably going to have to somewhat belt it out so they can hear you back there on the balcony.
Okay. Well, normally I can restrain myself, so I'll just...
Let it go.
Yeah,
okay,
go to my normal,
your normal volume.
Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you. I was looking at, I have had some opportunities recently to be reminded to look at that critical step. It's been often referred to that sort of when you're sort of wholly identified with conditioning mm-hmm. in a really sort of obvious suffering kind of way.
Uh-huh.
It's sort of like being in the fire.
Uh-huh.
And
so you're in the middle of the suffering. You know you're in the middle of the suffering. It's your whole world.
Yeah, I mean, you might not even know that. I mean, you are that suffering.
You are that suffering.
You know, it's, yeah. I don't even know if there's that step back to say, like, mm-hmm. I know I'm in this thing mm-hmm. that is suffering. It's just, this is what's happening. And I'm doing it. You know, that's the identification. It's like the every thought that comes through, it's like, well, that's what I think. This is me.
Uh-huh. It's all your
me.
Whole reality.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And that critical step out of the fire of, it's that willingness to step out of the fire, and that the insight that I'm seeing that is, that sort of enables that, is the recognition that it's not me. Uh-huh. That it's like, oh my God, wait a minute. I mean, it's very sort of Zen 101, but it is the step away from the system that allows all the other moving away to happen. I think it's just that recognition that every thought that passes through my head is not my doing. Mm-hmm.
Sometimes we talk about, so there we are, we're outside, we're looking at the sky, and there are clouds passing by. Mm-hmm. And we're not trained to take the clouds personally, right? We don't think those clouds have anything to do with me, that I need to try to hold on to the, you know, certain ones, because those are really pretty, and well, I don't really like those, and push those away. And it sounds like you're realizing that everything, including the thoughts in your own head, are sort of that same thing. They're not yours, you don't need to have a relationship with them in any way.
And that is that is what opens the door. Because in taking it personally, as you say, in believing it's me doing it, then whatever terrible thing comes through my head, it opens the door to all the self-hate and the guilt and the shame and the believing it, and if it's directed towards somebody else, well, I really think that this person is that way because I just thought it.
Meanwhile, 2 seconds later is going to be the, what a bad person I am.
For thinking that
about them. Yeah. We were looking at something very similar last night in the first group of the retreat, just that sense of what a gift it is to come somewhere where we can realize that all that stuff that goes on is just what goes on, and that we don't have to take it personally or even necessarily do anything about it, but to have the space to just start to see what it is, just to see that it goes on.
The song dropped in during meditation, I just realized what a perfect sort of anthem of a sort of explanation of karma. We didn't light the fire. It's always burning since the world's been turning. Uh-huh. And then just lists, you know, in that amazing way, sort of karmic.
Do people know the song that he's talking about? Is it a Billy Joel?
I believe originally, yeah. A lot of people have covered it.
See, I've been here a long time. So. But them just lists all the wreckage of kind of human existence.
But we didn't light it.
Yeah.
You know, and it happens internally. I mean, it's the same kind of thing. And to mix metaphors a little bit, it's like that stepping off the wheel. It's just stop kicking the wheel. But if I believe the wheel is me, there's nothing to be done, but just I'm just along for the ride.
Yeah.
And that, I've heard Sherry just say yesterday, that suffering system is truly, and it's the other sort of key piece of it, that it's so not a selfish experience. I mean, it may seem like the behaviors or the attitude may seem so self-absorbed, and I mean, it is so egocentric in that way, but the person gets nothing out of it.
Right.
Absolutely nothing.
So, in other words, let me see if I'm tracking you. So, kind of that being completely absorbed in my world and what's going on with me and all of that, you could say, gosh, how selfish that is, right? How self-absorbed. And it's self-absorbed in the sense of the attention is completely narrow. But that to realize that in this case, Kevin, that's not a pleasant experience for Kevin. It's not as if Kevin's getting anything out of that or having a joyful life experience. In fact, quite the opposite. That the more attention there is on sort of me, the more closed down we are and the less available we are to the miracle of just being alive.
Absolutely. And there was something else that just dropped in as you were saying that. And maybe it just flew out as quickly. let me see if it comes back. That. It's gone.
You know, it's a fun illustration to underline your point, isn't it? Right? Because they're just things that are floating through. And if they were yours, you wouldn't have lost it, right? If you had created it and made it, it would still be here and you could do what you want with it.
I remember what the line was.
It works every time. The facilitator stalls.
Thank you.
Let's not stall longer, though.
No, it's that that if the... so long as... did it not go away? Please, no.
So long
as... Oh, right. The realization that that's not me,
yeah.
It seems like when I'm on fire, when I'm on the wheel, it seems like, well, I wish I could believe that, or I would like to, I approached it from a belief perspective, and uh-huh. I is never going to believe that.
Nope.
I doesn't wish to believe that.
Nope.
Nope. That's just the other key thing. Yeah. I mean, it's just, I, over time, seen it
yep.
to be true.
Yeah,
which
exactly.
is very different.
Very different, and again, feels like it underlines the point, at least that I hear you making, which is that really all we bring to the table is the letting go piece. You know, it's why meditation is the foundation of what we do. We're training ourselves to just be here. You know, life is living each of us perfectly. And it's just that, boy, all kinds of stuff up here gets in our way of that. You know, and so we just come back here where all of it is unfolding perfectly.
There was a line in the most recent Musings article that really resonated with me. Well, it was a paragraph. It was kind of a conversation between a practitioner and a guide.
So the Musings article, one of the writings that comes out monthly yeah. to the whole Sangha, which is a beautiful illustration of, it's sort of a practice principle, sort of a foundation of one of the things that we practice with, often told in a beautiful sort of parable, kind of a, yeah.
Yeah.
Format.
Yeah, and sometimes student kind of teacher conversations that I find really helpful.
Yeah.
And yeah. that was kind of the end of this conversation. There was a paragraph that the student says, well, if waking up and ending suffering is not about living a more comfortable life, what's it about then? And the guy says, well, that's what you get to find out.
Yeah.
And then points in this very helpful place to look, something along the lines of, what is your experience of being comfortable with discomfort?
Yes.
As that is a place to live.
Yeah.
And wow, it was really fun to see kind of where that went as I was looking at it.
Uh-huh. So you put, I'm guessing you put yourself in the shoes of the student,
right?
Right? And you went, okay, well, what is that for me?
Yeah.
How does that, what's my experience of that?
Exactly. Yeah. And I saw this duality, and kind of two sides, like the two extreme sides of the duality, are kind of what maintain this experience of not getting to find out
uh-huh.
what comfortable with discomfort is. Because
yeah.
on the one side,
yeah.
it's, I'm comfortable in my little life, in my
yeah.
cozy little house, in my cozy little life,
yeah.
and I don't want to do anything that rocks the boat.
Yeah.
I definitely don't want to lean out and stretch in some direction.
Yeah.
Because, whoa.
Yeah.
So that's, you know, discomfort is out there.
Yeah.
And that's the kind of barrier between me and any new behavior.
Uh-huh.
So there I'm stuck in this uncomfortable with discomfort.
Yeah.
And then,
yeah.
But then I saw the other side of the duality is this kind of like warrior kind of Rambo type of personality that's like, I'm gonna put myself in the most uncomfortable situation and
yeah.
just, like, you know, attack it.
Yeah.
I'm gonna grind it out.
Yeah.
And kind of turns it into a contest.
Yeah.
And then, and from that perspective, it kind of sees practice as all lack and deprivation and
uh-huh.
austerity, and it's hard and it's painful.
Uh-huh.
But what I saw there is, like, in that experience, there's no, like, moving through the discomfort
right.
to comfort. It's just staying stuck in that discomfort.
Yeah.
And that the whole point of that is to, well, it's kind of like to discourage a person.
Uh-huh.
You know,
yep.
discourage me that the practice doesn't work.
Yeah.
Or then also to kind of like to keep me from seeing what's available in the middle.
Yes.
Which what I was seeing was the opportunity. It's kind of like I heard Sherry say once about sitting still. I think it's in the writing about sitting still.
Uh-huh.
How if we recognize what we're doing, we're not sitting still. Then we have the opportunity to see
yes.
what sitting still is.
Yes.
So if what I see is that in my life I'm doing this not being comfortable with discomfort,
yes.
I can see what being comfortable with discomfort is.
Yes, yes, precisely. And we could even say that very likely when you had that realization of, oh, you know, I'm being uncomfortable with this with discomfort, that in that you're already beginning to see it. Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, and it's so great the way you lay that out, those two places where they're sort of baseline the same thing, aren't they? They're either avoiding something or trying to hold on to something.
Yeah, that's a great way to put it.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, especially when you describe that comfortable, you know, I'm in my house, and you know, and I just gotta, yeah. I mean, there's so much, it's like just discomfort surrounding it, right? Because it's you gotta keep everything at bay.
It's a prison cell.
It's a prison cell, right? To avoid everything that isn't gonna somehow impinge on that carefully laid comfort. Right?
Yeah.
And then that other side of like, all right, we're going to go out there and just do it.
That's a war zone.
A war zone, exactly. Yeah. And all of it avoiding having the experience, at least this is my experience of it, of just being in each moment and realizing our own adequacy to every moment.
That's exactly it. That's exactly it. Realizing our own adequacy to every moment.
Yeah.
And what I was seeing is possible. To practice,
yeah.
And I love it. It's a practice.
Yeah.
Maybe I don't have to nail it perfectly the first time,
right.
But it's to like, you know, without going to the extreme of like, I'm going to run through this and do it perfectly. It's just, I'm going to take a baby step in this direction that the heart is calling me towards, and where there is some resistance,
I'll
go up against it
with
a ton of love, support, compassion. I'm going to support this person like crazy, as I heard someone in the group say one time.
Yeah.
With recording and listening.
Yeah.
And I'm just going to be there for him and let him have whatever experience he has, just completely devoted and committed to allowing this person to have his life.
Yeah. You know, this morning we looked at meditation and we watched that DVD that Sherry made years ago about meditation. And she uses that analogy of training a puppy.
Yeah.
And so, you know, if you want the puppy to be trained to come to you when you want it to come to you, which there are all kinds of reasons that puppy needs to learn to come to you when you want it to come to you, right? And most of them have to do with the love for the puppy, right? So there we are, we're out in a busy street. It needs to be able to come to me like that if I need it to come to me, right? But if what we do is we're training from our own frustration, get over here, darn it, why won't you? We're not training the puppy to come to want to be with us, right? I mean, this is not going to happen.
Yeah.
It's the exact same thing with ourselves.
Yeah.
And from what you're describing, that way of training, of just so much love and care and patience for the person, for ourselves, as we're practicing, gosh, that makes us want to practice. It makes us want to train.
And that's completely my experience of this practice and this sangha. All the way along, it's always been like, it always blows my mind how kind, how gentle, how compassionate, how patient.
Yeah.
There's no standards.
Yeah.
There's no expectations.
Yeah.
It always meets you exactly where you are.
Yeah.
And it's just right there. It's like, wow, it's the perfect modeling.
Yeah.
And it's so fun becoming that for myself.
Yes, yeah. And you know what I love about practice in general, but specifically being at the monastery, is that really all we need to do is to just show up. You know, it's why following the schedule is such a huge piece of what we do. You know, we don't have to necessarily like it at any given moment, but just show up, because life gives us everything we need to see whatever we need to see. You know, I was thinking about the comfort discomfort, right? We don't have to make ourselves uncomfortable. At some point, it's going to be 100 degrees, right? Or there are going to be a billion mosquitoes.
Right.
That's just the way it is, right?
Yeah.
So life is going to give us those opportunities. We don't have to create them. And it's also going to give us so many days when it's 73 degrees and the wildflowers are everywhere and we're relaxed and there's nothing to do and the creek is full of water, and you know, it gives us everything to practice with. We don't need to lay something on top of it.
Like Sherry said in the email class recently, she quoted Ram Dass. You don't need to rip the skin off the snake.
Yeah.
It just happens naturally.
It does.
It just happens on its own.
Yeah.
Don't have to do anything.
Yeah.
Show up.
Yeah. So true. Thank you. Penny.
That was very helpful. I had this interesting experience. I've taken on a project that is pushing the envelope big time for me.
Okay.
And
kind of outside that comfort zone.
Outside that comfort zone.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Not yet, but will be.
Okay.
It's in terms of regression of it. And okay. So I had a chance to watch what happened in my energy in two different situations relative to that kind of thing.
Uh-huh.
So I proposed this project to this group that I'm part of,
Okay. And
it was received enthusiastically. And you're all like, yeah, and my energy was up. And was,
okay, can I make sure I'm with you? You proposed the project that's outside your comfort zone?
Yes.
Wow, all right.
Yes. I proposed this project to this board I'm on.
Uh-huh.
And so it was, yeah, let's do this. And then I went to a meeting later in the day, a community meeting about a different subject. It was an open public meeting around a very contentious issue, which
okay.
this is likely to be also.
Okay.
Different issue.
Okay.
And there was a lot of contention.
Okay.
And I just watched the energy, you know, like watching a fuel tank go boom, 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 boom.
Uh-huh.
I just watched the energy dissipate.
Uh-huh.
So by the time I got home, I was pooped. And I didn't do anything other than just be at the meeting.
Uh-huh.
And so I thought, well, what a great opportunity to see what I'm up against, and to see what different parts of me respond to.
Uh-huh.
And on the Enneagram, my propensity is in the direction of five, which likes ideas and data gathering and putting stuff together.
So let's do a quick thing on the Enneagram.
Yes.
So the Enneagram being a kind of a personality typing system that seems to go really well with spiritual practice.
Right.
I think it's the, people can help me out here, but the culmination of a number of ancient traditions that have come together. There are 9 types, and boy, they seem to really, a lot of people really resonate with, it nails quite well,
yeah.
Kind of what are, not who we are so much as you say, our propensities. And what's so helpful about it is it can be a lens to assist with sort of, oh, well, no wonder. No wonder she comes at it that way, or, you know, I feel this way in this situation because I sort of have that groove to do that, if you will.
Yes.
So anyway, you're potentially a 5.
My type is one that likes to do things sort of privately,
and likes
ideas about things.
Let me just sit and think. I'll just be over here.
Yeah. And so the whole first part of this project would be to pull stuff together.
So the first part might work well.
Yeah, it's going to work very well.
Yeah.
And in fact, I had this great experience with a mentor. So first of all, I had been resisting the whole project. And then I had a conversation with the mentor on the recorder.
Uh-huh.
And the mentor pointed out that the very strengths that this kind of spirit person has are the very strengths necessary for the first part of the project.
Uh-huh.
And all we need to do is the first part of the project, step by step. Mm-hmm. And then that somebody else can come in to do other parts.
Uh-huh.
Other parts of this being can be called upon to do other parts.
So I did want to take one quick pause and just say for folks who are joining us just this week that what you essentially did is you're checking in with yourself and you're looking to see, okay, instead of like Kevin was pointing out in the beginning, just whole believing what you're being told, oh, I'm going to hate this and this is going to be terrible and I don't want to, you know, kind of that avoiding, stopping to check in with yourself. And that's something that through the course of the retreat, we're going to be talking more about the hows to do that. But that's what you're pointing at, that process of doing that.
Yeah. And finding, you know, dimensions of yourself that can do different pieces of the work.
Mm-hmm.
So when I came home from this meeting drained, I had this neat experience the next morning of saying the Daily Recollection. And having lines of the Daily Recollection like reach out to me.
Uh-huh.
It was just the most amazing thing. It's basically, it's a source of strength.
Uh-huh.
And so there's comfort in knowing that there are parts of me that can address the later part, the more public parts.
Uh-huh. Yep.
But the main thing that arose was that the meta process is to come from love.
Yeah.
And it's going to be such an interesting challenge to come from love into what is potentially a very contentious situation.
Right.
And even within the group I work with, the board I work with, we're addressing an issue that people are pretty angry about.
Uh-huh.
So to come from love within that,
yeah.
Even within, with my allies,
yes. Know, yeah.
Is going to be just a really amazing experience.
Yeah.
And the only thing possible is to absolutely lean on that.
Yeah, and it's such an interesting place, isn't it? Because I don't know what the particular issue is, but just going to my own experience of when there can be a lot of something about an issue, it does come from love. At
oh, yeah.
base, it comes from whatever it is, loving the trees or loving the people who are going to be affected by the, or loving the, or in some, and I suspect that's true for all of us. You know, even if someone's on the, quote, wrong side of the issue, right? Which means the side of the issue I'm not on, right? But at very, very base, we can guess that it does come from love on some level. And so that kind of radical practice of, could I practice with staying with that? And then just seeing what it's like from that perspective.
Yeah, thank you. I mean, that articulates exactly that you know, we can plug into where people are coming from in different places.
Yeah.
And I think you're right. I think at bottom, people have been with this for 15 years because they love the forest. So to bring the energy to that.
Yeah.
And to stay, to keep faith with that.
Yeah.
Is the only thing that can sustain it. And what I'm seeing is that's the practice.
Yeah.
Whatever happens with the trees.
Right.
And I hope good things happen with the trees. But
right.
The practice is to do this step-by-step of love for this being,
yeah.
for everybody we're dealing with, even when it seems like this situation may be most unloving.
Yeah, yeah, and you know, I mean, we have heard that piece of wisdom come down from just about every religious tradition, and certainly it's a major tenet of this practice that the way we talk about it is, what you practice is what you have,
yeah.
Or one process doesn't lead to another,
yeah.
Right? So my great love for the forest, if the way that I go about that is to hate everyone who doesn't love the forest,
right.
You know, what are we going to be left with?
Yeah.
The hate.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it can, I mean, it's a huge puzzle, right, for a lot of people. Yeah, but they don't seem to love the forest, so how am I just going to be in love? And, well, we don't know, you know. And going back to that place of, I think it was Lakota that was talking about, we don't ever give ourselves the chance to check it out. We just stay in that argument between the two places. But to give ourselves, well, let me just really find out, what would it be like? You know, what would it be like to come from a different place? And then we see people like Gandhi or Nelson Mandela, who seem to have whatever they had, to stay in that place and to really, well, what if? What if we approached it from this other possibility, from this other place?
Well, and because that's the only place that could yield a loving result, and that has to be the practice.
Yeah. 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 Thank you. Eleanor.
It seems that my practice has been about developing that place. That place of love.
Of love. Uh-huh.
And what I'm seeing is like, I've kind of compared it to strengthening a muscle.
Yeah, good image.
That
yeah.
I find myself pulled out into whatever suffering it is, which seems a lot of time for me is that when you type, you know, my fixation is off, usually tends to be the obligation to do the right thing.
Uh-huh. So going back to the Enneagram, that your type is more kind of the right-wrong, got to do the right thing, and so you find yourself being pulled in that direction a lot, and that feels like the place where the love muscle could use a little more strength.
Exactly. So it's helped me to see that, especially as it says standards and expectations, like other people have talked about, for practice.
Yes, precisely. Yeah, because that's what it wants us to do, right? So there I am. I decide that I want to strengthen this love muscle, right? And probably with that comes some excitement and enthusiasm, and that's going to be really fun, right? And then we get to a place just like we would in weightlifting, right, where we start to lift, what, you know, 50 pounds. Oh, actually, that was a little much today, right? We'll put that down. Maybe that's for next week, right? But what's supposed to happen, you know, the way that the conditioned mind is training us, is if that happens, if we get pulled out, see, that's just more proof that you can't do this and blah, blah, blah. But, right, our ace is that if we bring love to that process, then we're left with the love. Right? That encouragement that we've heard people talking about this morning.
And it does feel like this, it does grow. It's like, yes. Oh, I remember this. You know, yes. this happens. Yeah. And with that, the acceptance that it happens.
Yep, it happens. It's a process. I mean, what are we in a hurry for? Where are we going? We're just practicing.
Each step.
And truly, I mean, it's hiding in plain sight from us, right? If each step is held in love, we already have the end result. Right? If what we want is love, and we bring love to each step, we're always in love, even as we're practicing that love muscle. Good deal. Rebecca.
So I've been looking at training. I'm in a real training the attention workshop.
Great.
Which, you know, we could say we always are in Zen practice.
Yeah. But mine's or we hope we always are.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
But it's the particular aspect of practice that seems to be very up for me right now.
Uh-huh.
And the line that was said this morning in the discussion that just kind of zing went right in was that the human gets nothing out of wandering off.
Yeah.
And it can feel so delicious, you know, to indulge reliving a fun time or reliving a movie or, you know, going off into one thing or another.
Just kind of thinking about this.
Yeah.
And, oh, yeah, remember that time that.
Yeah. And, oh, I love that scene where, you know.
Wasn't that cool when.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And to get it that does not serve the human is just so fundamental.
Yeah, so fundamental. And in my experience, we have to have our own experience of it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Have to find out. Because it sounds, especially in the cases like you're underlining, I mean, come on, big deal, really. I mean, what's the harm in going off to think about that movie or to wonder about this or to, you know.
What's the big deal is such an effective, has been an ego line. Oh, what's the big deal? And it is a big deal.
Yeah, because maybe that one little thing in that one little moment, is that going to completely wreck your life? You know, is anything going to happen there? No, you know.
Yeah.
But it's the process of training, right, that you're pointing at, that what we want to do is to be able to choose where we want our attention to be.
Yes. And even that's kind of tricky, because who's the we that is choosing where, because ego can impersonate that very well. But so what I've noticed, and that's what's so beautiful about being here in the monastic, with the structures and the privileged environment and all of that, is that it assists to reveal when that kind of takeover, that impersonation of authenticity by conditioned mind has happened.
Uh-huh.
And it doesn't always happen immediately, but eventually, in my experience anyway, eventually it will be clear.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, because we'll bump up against the structure, and fortunately in this place the structure doesn't bend, doesn't cave to that pressure. That in my experience, it does so much out in the world.
Mm-hmm. Right. So being here at the monastery, we're all doing the same thing. We're all attempting to bring our attention to the present moment. And in that present moment, we're cared for completely.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I keep looking at your shirt that says, be generous, right? And in my experience, that's the most generous thing we can do, is to bring the attention back here. Because in here, in the present moment, outside of all that conversation or whatever's going on in our head, we're cared for perfectly.
Yeah. Yes, and what I saw in again, in the midst of this conversation, this discussion, has been how you know, that line, we'll do for the love of others that we would not be willing to do for ourselves. Mm-hmm. And how, you know, you mentioned earlier keeping the schedule and all of that. That's really never been, it's like this, and maybe this has something to do with this Enneatype, right? But I will show up with, if there's someone else, you know, and to impress or to please or to, you know, that we'll see that, oh, look, she's showing up.
Right. Okay. Yeah, got it.
But when it's just me, mm-hmm. you know, when it's
and no one knows.
And no one knows.
And you're not doing anything for anyone else.
Exactly. Uh-huh. Or I'm not even doing anything that hurts anybody else. Uh-huh. Uh-huh. That's a big thing, you know. Uh-huh. That's where that, what's the big deal, mm-hmm. comes in. Mm-hmm. And as you say, we have to get it, have our own experience that the human is harmed. Mm-hmm. Even when nobody else knows. And find or recognize or yeah. whatever that willingness
yeah.
to show up for her.
Yeah.
Even when, quote, nobody else knows.
Yeah, truly, yeah. And I think you're underlining why, especially as we set out in practice, such an important piece of what we do, and it's an important piece of the work we'll be doing here this week, is getting a look at all of what does go on inside yeah. of our head, and how that, what the experience of living in the middle of that is. On one level, of course, we know what the experience of that is, right? We're having that, we're having it all day long, every day. But we don't generally really turn and look straight at it and see, wow, that's not serving me.
Yeah.
That's not a happy place to be. You know, that's not leaving me with joy and well-being and openness, and it's not leaving me in that place that is possible for me if I'm just here and present.
Yeah. Yeah, and I just love how, I just love the process that was talked about, I mean, you know, earlier, that it's all, nothing's ever wasted. You know, it's all training.
Oh, yeah.
So that
that's a good point.
That process of, you know, oh, this isn't really looking as straight, this isn't serving me. It can be as something as obvious as, you know, smoking or harmful behaviors or, you know, whatever. And then, that is necessary. That's part of all the training.
Absolutely.
And then we seem to be getting subtler and subtler ways that it's not serving us.
Yep. It's, again, I go back to the DVD that we saw this morning in meditation. This is not self-improvement.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right? It's truly, which is the hardest thing to get. Surely it is. Surely it's about, you know, stopping doing all the things I shouldn't do and getting plenty of exercise and being the right person and being kind to everyone. And, you know, I think it gets confusing for people because often all of those things do fall into place.
Yeah.
Right? When we start living in the present moment, we tend not to want to do things that harm the body. We tend to be kind to everyone around us. But those are the things that happen because we're dropping all of this and being in the present.
Yeah.
But it's not the same as, okay, I got to fix myself in this way, and this way, and this way, and this way.
Yeah. Because if it was, then, okay, as soon as I quit smoking, quit drinking, and stop eating sugar, then I'm going to stop looking.
Uh-huh.
You know, because if it were about self-improvement like that, as soon as I get to some sort of plateau that ego describes as, okay, you're okay now.
Yeah.
You know, then I'll stop looking.
Yeah.
And that's so the antithesis of what we're about.
Exactly. It's not what we're going for at all. And it takes me back to what Lakota was saying, where that, you know, okay, I'm going to stop drinking and stop eating sugar, that's designed to put us in a corner, right?
Uh-huh.
Where we haven't addressed anything that's going on. And now I don't get to have sugar, I don't get to drink, and I don't get to, and this stinks, you know?
And in the
and meanwhile, you know, by the way, practice is stupid and I don't want to do it. You know?
Well, and in the meantime, my attention is still firmly controlled and in the camp of egocentric karmic conditioning. And I haven't trained the attention at all.
Right.
Because it's always been in reference to that story of what will make me the right person. You know, I get one last thing, this little image. I keep getting this image of training. You mentioned training the puppy.
Mm-hmm.
And so we have a person, a monk, who's training a dog at this time on the property. And to just watch the constancy of the presence with the all the time, just all the time. And that there's just no, you know, it's easy to project that there's no big agenda, that this is going to be a prize-winning dog, you know, take him to dog shows and see how well he behaves or anything
like that. At 11 years old.
Look, my dog doesn't live. But it's just for the love of the of everybody, actually, the dog, the being, the community, you know, everything. And that's kind of the, even when no one's watching, the training will have
Can you guys hear?
Dibkin?
Yeah, they can.
No.
Okay. This I can.
even when nobody's watching, the training will have stuck. Yeah. You know, the training will have mattered. Because it just does.
Yeah. And because it matters here.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, ultimately, that's what we've got, is this experience.
Yeah.
Right? So showing up, I'm using quote marks, for that person, you know, you were talking about the what they'll think, and so that they see me, and so that they, again, back to what Kevin was saying, the human gets nothing from that. Gets nothing. It's only what counts is showing up here for this person in this experience, which is the same, handily, as showing up for all of life.
Handily, yeah. So good.
Scott.
First of all, it's just so exciting to have everyone be here.
Yeah.
It's so easy to project a lot of just willingness and courage, people clearing off their life and showing up to this place. It's probably about as different as it could be from there.
We were saying last night, at the end of a dirt road at 100 degrees.
Yeah. And what's so great is, of course, if I'm projecting that, I just go right to that experience of willingness and courage and excitement. So it's very fun. I appreciate the discussion around training the attention and some of the other pieces that are going on. I've just been watching how life is constantly guiding and dropping in things for me, dropping in kind of the term we use for life just coming in, maybe just saying, well, I'll give an example. So I was mopping the kitchen floor the other day, and at some point I looked down and the water's dirty. It's just clear, like the water, it needs to be changed.
Yeah.
And then this voice comes in and says, well, you can't waste water.
Uh-huh.
You know, and you can kind of tell because there's a you voice and it's like, it's kind of harsh.
Uh-huh.
You know, it's
you can't
like,
waste water.
Yeah, I mean, because it always kind of uses some bit of truth, like, we are in a drought and we are being thoughtful about water.
Right.
You know, so it's like, oh, okay. It hits somebody who believes, just like, okay.
Oh, okay, I guess I can. Yeah.
And then, you know, and what I also notice about life is life is always kind, and it just gently keeps coming.
Yeah.
So it says, what I heard was, well, if this was your house, would you change the water?
Uh-huh.
Well, yeah.
Uh-huh.
But still.
Still.
There was, no, but the authority voice, basically, I imagine talking to somebody who believes you're going to be in trouble.
Right.
Even though I didn't hear that,
I was going to say on some level, I'm guessing that was a little bit at least unconscious, because if you were really seeing it, you would have caught on.
Yeah.
Well, that's silly.
Yeah. No. In fact, I don't even know what I caught, but there was the continued mopping, and then life again in its persistent gentleness spoke through another mouth saying, "Hey, have I changed that?" And that kind of process has happened several times lately while watching that.
Yeah.
And
two big choices right there, huh? At that moment.
At that, the last one?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's what's funny is that that's not true. It doesn't really seem like a choice at that time. It's like, okay, we're definitely going to change the water.
Right. Well, I more meant on the kind of where you could go with that.
Oh, yeah,
so
exactly.
Life,
yeah, thank you. So that's actually the place I've been working with really well, because so if the person who thinks they're going to be in trouble hears that, and, you know, we're bumping up all kinds of things when we're in a monastery setting, you could hear it as, you know, you knew to change the water,
right?
Even though that thing saying you knew to change the water is the same thing that said don't change the water.
Yeah.
And then you could feel bad, and then I could just be listening to blah blah blah, yeah. Or well, they don't know.
Do they know about the drought?
Yeah, they know about the drought. The other time you said didn't drink more. So it could go down that route. Instead, the place I am, because you know these sensations come up, you know, like a vulnerability and like kind of an anger and a justification. Mm-hmm. And I've just been watching that instead of reacting to it and believing that it means, oh yeah, I need to.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
Well, it's funny because you're not going to say anything.
Right.
We're in a privileged environment.
Right. Yeah.
So you're not going to say, well, but the other time, you're just not going to do that.
Right.
So you just sit with it, and then it just kind of moves on through. Uh-huh. And then, of course, what I get to see is all the kindness.
Yeah.
You know, this gentleness about, hey, and it's not just the water, it's the, put your attention here.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Not on the water and drought, and don't you know any better, and just come here.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, that's what was that I was hearing in that too. It takes me back to that last conversation of how generous it is to the human to do, you know, so we're supposed to think that all those reactions of either feeling bad, right? Well, I should feel bad because I did the wrong thing, or right? Or defense, you know, it's not fair because blah, 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 that somehow that's for me, right? Like I'm defending me or I'm, but in fact, if we really, really stop and look at it, which I'm thinking is what you're talking about, what you're describing, in that all those sensations of that, you know, maybe it's anger or defense or feeling bad or all the literal physiological things that happen in the body, we're so trained to kind of want to get away from that in some way. But to have that amazing skill to not do that and just to simply watch as that all comes through, to realize I don't have to act from that. And that in fact, instead, I can bring great kindness to the person. Yeah. You know, I mean, I don't know what actually happened, but, you know, potentially to say something like, oh, that is so cool. You know, we saw that whole thing, and there was another example of that, of how you try to get talked out of something. And I'll bet you, if we keep seeing that, you know, that won't happen, you know. I mean, just all that kind of encouragement.
Yeah.
For the being and how generous and kind that is, instead of going to that other place that you're describing.
You said it's not for the human, and the way we can tell that is our body tenses up.
Yeah.
We feel really drained afterwards, and we're just unhappy.
Yep.
So you can just tell that process is not for the benefit of the human. And the other one is that perspective is so much fun because it's an exploration, it's an adventure.
Exactly.
And from that place, that spirit of inquiry, you can see that life, it feels like life's setting up these things to work through all these old,
right.
I think what you're describing is kind of this pairing between the sensation and like something's wrong with me.
Right.
You know, I've got to defend myself or whatever I've got to do.
Yep.
We can just keep seeing that and keep, we call it like burning of the karma.
Yes.
Just, it's not real. But you can't just go up to someone and go, well, it's not real, just relax. It feels like you have to go through the experience and bring that conscious awareness, compassionate conscious awareness to it.
Yeah.
And that is the transformation.
Exactly.
And it does start to happen with that kind of, wow, oh, or just thank you.
Yes.
It does, and then you can kind of start to work your way back.
Yeah.
Well, what happened before that?
Right.
Oh, well, next time. And then that's where the attention's being trained.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
So then it's just kind of catching it a little bit earlier.
Right. Which is what I'm hearing you say is that just naturally happens as we pay attention. So there's nothing we really need to figure out or, you know, now where did that come from? And I remember that one time when I was four, that must have been when I need to dismantle that. No, you know, that it comes up. We bring that conscious compassion awareness to it. We see through whichever components of it we see through that time. On it goes. It comes up again a week later or a month or 3 seconds or whatever it is, right? And each time it arises into conscious compassion awareness, into that kindness we've been talking about this morning, into that love, it's being worn away.
Yeah, and a little humor helps too.
A little humor, I was going there too. Especially for those times where it doesn't seem to be terribly available to take the what we might call higher ground. You know, where that just frustration and takes over, and then there's just that like, how frustrating is it, you know?
Yeah.
Let the human have the experience.
Yeah. And just one last thing that I've been noticing about the resistance to accepting the things that are like...
Are you guys hearing Scott? Okay.
Oh, okay.
Okay. A little bit.
I'll talk to him this way.
Okay.
The last thing was just that the life guidance dropping in, like, hey, how would you change that water? Or would you, you know, if it was your house, what would you do? Those places where I noticed that, to really just allow myself to receive that.
Yes.
Because there's something about, I think, being identified with ego is basically saying that's not for you. Because if you could see that, that there's this intuition coming in and that you're receiving it, then something's wrong with you or you're inconsequential doesn't work because now you are that intelligence. You see yourself as part of the intelligent kind system.
Yes.
And if that makes sense.
Yeah, yeah. So essentially, you're training yourself to hear that information come through. So when you hear that, it might be time to change the water. Then you just, I mean, internally, because that you heard it first internally, you pay attention to that. Yeah. You train yourself to pay attention to that.
Yeah. And you can take those periods to stop and check in. I think Kevin was sort of demonstrating that earlier on. Wait, I kind of lost that. And just, you can just pause any time. In the middle of a conversation, you can pause.
Right, exactly.
Just check in.
Yeah, yeah. And what a kindness that really is, right, yeah. To people around us. So I'm in a conversation with someone I love, and I'm just about to, you know, go for it in not such a helpful way, maybe. And I say, you know what, I'm just going to pause for 1 minute. We can only imagine the gratitude that might be on the other end of that, right? We're told that's going to be awkward or weird or you're going to be, but, you know, just let me just pause for 1 second, you know. Is that Allison? Oh, no. Sorry. Yeah.
It's once again, it feels like the song has been in my head all week. The conversation that's happening today is exactly what I've been.
Isn't that great? Yeah.
And there is a line in our recitation that, and as someone was sharing earlier, you know, it's really encouraged me through the week. And it's just time and time again has been coming up. And it's, we are not here to create your queen's beliefs.
Yeah.
And, a lot of the belief I've been noticing this week has been around comfort and discomfort.
Mm-hmm.
And in like all different parts of my life, so, you know, I'm an Enneagram type 2, you know, which is a lot about connection and wanting to help and you know, the sacrifice of this being.
Uh-huh.
And so at work, I've had to practice opportunities for conflict. And my belief has always been conflict uncomfortable, conflict bad. So that was happening. And then my doctor has me on cleanse, and there was this belief around, you know, when I don't have certain foods in my life, then there's discomfort.
Uh-huh.
And I'm having to really look at my belief around that. And then in my spiritual life, it's an ongoing kind of belief, you know, that I need to know what I feel about death and dying. I need to stand firm and sometimes believe around what happens with that.
Uh-huh.
So in all areas of my life, I'm kind of looking at that right now.
Uh-huh.
And all that I've noticed through this kind of sitting with this, looking, is all I'm being asked to do is just sit with it and stretch to meet life wherever it is in all of those situations.
Uh-huh. That's a nice image. Stretch to meet life wherever it is.
Yeah, so it's like, okay, I can't have dairy or corn or soy or you know, all these things right now. So I'm stretching to meet life with where I am right now with my food.
Yeah.
There is no discomfort. Like this being's needs are being met.
Yeah. Yeah.
The conflict at work, you know, with it doesn't have to be uncomfortable. And I sat and focused on my breathing and listened to the person wholeheartedly.
Wow.
And then I said my piece. Mm-hmm. It didn't have to be uncomfortable.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And again, it was just trusting that life is going to give me what I need.
Yeah. And you know what's so interesting as you lay that out, that from the way you describe it, that place is almost, we could say, comfortable,
yeah.
Right? That place of where it's expansive, of it's okay to, you know, so there are all these foods that I'm used to eating that comfort me in some way, and I'm not being able to eat them right now, right? And that's okay to realize that that's very much for the person, right? To support the person, in that case, physically.
And in a way, I could take that even further, and this has been, these are gifts that life is giving me.
Yeah.
You know, it's an opportunity for me to see a whole new world unfolding, you know, a practice opportunity to sit with conflict and not have any belief around it.
Right.
You know,
right.
That's like, that is life-changing for this.
Truly.
It really has
Truly.
Been.
Yeah.
And I have so much gratitude for this practice. And I just in so many areas of my life lately, and you know, it's not, it truly is about living every part of my life, bringing this practice to that. And
Well, and that was a very clear illustration of, you know, that place of being able to be in a situation, and for you it's conflict, and to practice being comfortable with that, that's freedom. You know, the other place that we were looking at earlier that Lakota was pointing out, he talked about it as a prison. That place where I don't like conflict, I'm going to push conflict out there, right? Supposedly to stay comfortable, but in the end, incredibly uncomfortable because I'm constantly having to fight against, you know, what's going on, right? Because life is everything. Life is all of it. So what we're doing in practicing, in practice, is not pushing things away, but we're practice expanding, as you talked about, to be able to be with all of it. And that's such a free place, because then life can be all of life, and we're practicing being okay with all of that.
And the gratitude that I have for, you know, 40 years of my life, I pushed conflict away.
Yeah.
And now I get to live another 40 this practice guiding me and stretching to me.
Much gratitude. Trini.
So, gratitude was the Hafiz quote that I looked at this morning. Join me in the pure atmosphere of gratitude to life.
Join me in the pure atmosphere of gratitude
to life.
To life.
And so I had the privilege of sitting in on the sitting clinic this morning and watching the secret ceremony, the secret CBD, and I can't tell you how many times I've watched it. And it was like I was watching it for the first time.
Wow.
And just there's so many emotions that come up in that receiving of that. It's always the first time.
Yeah.
There's always something to learn from it.
Yeah.
And that in those 20 minutes, every aspect of this practice was laid out. Mm-hmm. There wasn't a word. If we just listened to that every day on our quarter, every principle of practice that was explained in this room or explored in this room is available.
Yeah.
And it was just, it's been such a fun experience to sit here and listen to every conversation and see the line from the DVD that talks to the principle that is being explored.
Yes.
And there's just that gratitude and wonder of, you know, the beauty, the elegance, the simplicity of what we do in awareness practice that has always been what's guided us through.
Yes.
And always available, and always new.
Always new.
I haven't seen it that way. Oh,
right.
I've seen it much more deeply now than I've ever seen it before.
Yes.
Wow, that sense of freshness, but also the sense of endurance. That I can always come home to any aspect of the teaching would always bring me to that place of being open.
Yeah.
And also to recognize that it's a recognition of openness when I feel that way.
Exactly. And that's the thing, isn't it, about that incredible beauty and simplicity of practice, is that what brings us to it is the recognition that we are that, or that is all of us, right? We're seeing that it's being mirrored in ourselves. And so we're drawn to it.
Yeah. and that capacity, that infinite capacity, that somehow the condition process says you understand it, you get it, you're done. But the same thing, at every level of excavation of letting go, like that, every time I let go, that same thing I see in a way that I've never seen before.
Yes.
Because I can receive it in a way that reflects the depth of what's fallen off.
Yes. Yep. Yep. And it really changes things 180 degrees, doesn't it? From that perspective of, okay, we're going to do this program and get finished with it and then be done. And then when something arises, we think, oh my gosh, I must be failing because that came up again, to a recognition that the process of practice is always going to be happening. We're not trying to finish. We're not getting anywhere. And that, so when something arises, we have that, you know, people were talking about almost that gratitude for it, because this is my opportunity to have a mirror to go even deeper with the next layer of what I'm seeing with this.
The line that jumps out to me around this, I think, for all that turns me to intrinsic purity, with the recognition that intrinsic purity, it's interesting, right? Because intrinsic purity is always there, and we can touch into it at any time.
Yeah.
We only don't know we're touching into it when it's not there. But right.
When it's obscured.
When it's obscured. Uh-huh. And so it's confusing because I can be instantly in intrinsic purity and know it and think that I'm done.
Uh-huh, exactly. And you know, as you say that, who could blame us, right? Because it's such a complete experience that it's hard from that place to imagine, well, what more could there be to this, you know? And it's true in a way, because that is true. When we're here, it is complete, right? It's just that then we go, and then we come back, and then we go, and then we come back, and then we go.
The acceptance of the landscape that covers the intrinsic purity, right? Sometimes the covering is huge.
Yeah.
And so my distance from it is experienced as that.
Uh-huh.
Huge.
Yeah.
And then sometimes the covering is not at all.
Right.
And so I'm in touch with it.
Yeah.
And to really recognize that I'm always being returned to intrinsic purity.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's just that I'm like, what I feel is the distance that I'm away from it.
Right, yeah. And that magic place, again, that we've been talking about this morning is, you know, can all of that be held in that love and that patience and that, so even when I'm far from it, that's not a problem.
Yeah.
There's nothing wrong.
Yeah.
There's nothing wrong.
Well, it's all the opportunity to practice compassion no matter what.
Compassion no matter what. Yep. Nice note to end on. Thank you all. Thank you.